Are you ready? Are you ready to take massive action towards building a life and lifestyle that rewards you with a fit body, endless supplies of mental and physical energy, and total freedom from guilt around food and exercise? This is Cut the Fat Podcast. All right. Hello, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray Heinisch, joined here with Blythe. Hey, Blythe.
Hey, Ray. How's it going?
Awesome. Awesome. How about yourself?
Doing fantastic. I'm happy to be here podcasting with you.
Great. Well, in today's podcast episode, you know, we're going to be talking about carb cycling a bit. We'll explain what carb cycling is and how it falls into your plan, maybe, or what are the golden nuggets associated with that particular style of eating. And, you know, maybe we'll talk about some other things as well, what's going on, maybe some new motivational stuff that's on our minds and things like that. How's that sound?
Sounds absolutely amazing. And I think the carb cycling topic is full of golden nuggets. So guys, make sure you take notes today.
Yeah. And, you know, why don't we take a little bit of a flashback here to one of our previous podcasts? It was episode 58, The 7 Core Guiding Principles of Fat Loss. And the reason I want to bring this up, because this is a real good opportunity to filter this topic of carb cycling through these 7 guiding principles. Because the whole purpose of the guiding principles is to help you kind of figure out what applies, what types of, you know, because everybody's out there telling they have the end-all be-all of weight loss success. So my goal with the 7 guiding principles is that you could say, okay, well, let's look at how this particular topic, for example, carb cycling, applies or filters through these 7 principles. So the first principle, and I'll just go through them, and then as we talk about carb cycling, we'll kind of revisit them and say, okay, look, it melds well with this one, or it doesn't meld well with this one. So the guiding principle number one is there are only two reasons why you're not losing weight. Either your program sucks, or your follow-through sucks. Right. And right. We're going to talk about that because that definitely connects to the whole carb cycling principle. Guiding principle number two is there's only one true fat loss formula, and it's different for everyone.
Yes.
The third guiding principle is willpower is an exhaustible resource. Nobody, and I mean nobody, you, me, or even the most self-disciplined person in the world, is immune to willpower exhaustion. Right. It happens to all of us. Guiding principle number four, eat and exercise to change your hormones, not to manage calories. Guiding principle number five, without self-awareness, nothing works. Guiding principle number six, there are calorie-free causes of fat storage. And guiding principle number seven, a successful program achieves three main goals. Number one, it changes body composition. Mm-hmm. Number two, it improves your health. And number three, it improves your energy levels. Okay.
Awesome. Yes.
So to start us off, Blythe, tell us what is this concept of carb cycling?
Well, how I usually explain it is carb cycling is a method of eating appropriately. So some days you eat higher carbohydrates, some days you eat an intermediate or medium level of carbohydrates, and other days you have a no carbohydrate day. And planning these types of days around your level of activity is usually where the secret for carb cycling lies. So people might say, where would I start? You know, well, on your highest activity day, you want to have the highest amount of carbohydrates. And then the following day, you know, so on. You have to make sure you're getting plenty of rest. You have to make sure you're eating the right type of carbohydrates, of course. And make sure that, you know, the formula is right for you when it comes to calculating how many grams of carbs. And generally speaking, Ray, I usually tell people to go for about 2 grams of carbs per pound of body weight on a high carb day, half a gram of carb on a lower carb day, and then no carb day, of course, is
almost none. Yep, almost
green veggies. Yeah,
right. So you know, let me kind of go back and give you, you know, my philosophy on the whole carb cycling concept. And that is that any effective weight loss program is a carb cycling program in one way or another. The struggle mm-hmm. that people run into is figuring out what is the best for yourself. So let's start off by saying that insulin is the primary driver of fat storage.
Yes.
I would probably say that there's no dispute about that. Well, and that's not even true. There are some people who claim that insulin isn't all that important for fat storage. But what I do know is that there are two ways that I could guarantee that anybody would somebody could walk into my office, and I don't care how skinny you are, that I could make you store fat and store a lot of it. And that is, I could inject insulin into your body, which will cause you to store fat, mm-hmm. or I could inject cortisol or cortisone mm-hmm. into your body, and you will okay. store fat. So we know that those two hormones are critical in the process of storing fat. We also know that people who lose the ability to manufacture insulin lose weight even when they're eating large quantities of calories.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? So let's just assume that insulin drives fat storage. So if that's the case, then yes, if we were to eat a practically no-carb diet, that would likely be one of the better ways to cause fat loss. And I would say those people in the low-carb camp would agree.
Right.
And so the question then becomes, well, why not just go low-carb? Well, because there are a couple of different what we would call side effects, right?
Yes.
Name some side effects.
And they're extreme.
Yeah, well,
some of the side effects, for me, I mean, from what I've found and even in myself, if I go without carbohydrates for any length of time, what's the first thing that I'm craving? Carbohydrates. So it leads to a binge or feeling really deprived. So that's something that's just not sustainable.
Right. And we could say moodiness is huge.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Lack of energy. Yeah. Irritability.
Irritability. Sometimes difficulty sleeping. People find when they're not eating carbs, they can't sleep as well.
Yeah.
We know that if you go for extended periods of time without carbs, it can cause increases in cortisol levels, which again is one of those hormones. I said if I can inject it into the skinniest person on earth, they will likely store fat.
Guaranteed.
Right. And so cortisol levels go up when we consume large or when we cut out carbs in its entirety, right? Or even a low-carb diet, if it's done for an extended period of time, can result in elevated cortisol levels. Testosterone levels can drop. Growth hormone levels can eventually begin to plummet. So there's a lot of thyroid function begins to decrease.
Mm-hmm.
So there are side effects to being on a low-carb, no-carb diet. And that's where we go back to the guiding principles here. And which of these guiding principles does this concept kind of or does a low-carb diet fail us? Well, number one, there are two reasons why you're not losing weight. Either your program sucks or your follow-through sucks. Well, unfortunately, a low-carb diet impacts both the program and the follow-through because, as I mentioned, just being on a low-carb diet indefinitely can cause the program to go completely limp. It can cause the program to completely fail you because of the impact it can have on cortisol, testosterone, growth hormone levels, binging, things like that, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And follow through. Do you think anybody on this earth has difficulty with follow through on a low carb, no carb diet?
Absolutely. I think it gives you a higher rating of failure when it comes to something like that. You know, you've got to find something that is comfortable enough and that you can continue to do, you know, something that you're going to be able to stick with.
Absolutely. So that's why I think, you know, guiding principle number one, I think a carb cycling approach does meet that principle, right? Because it does seem to help us improve the effect of the program and our follow through of the program because we can incorporate some carbs at strategic times, right?
Yes, and that's the key.
Strategic times. And we're going to talk about that as we kind of get further on in the discussion. When we get into the how-to, maybe we'll have you give your recommendations as to how you would implement something like this.
Sure. Yeah.
And so the guiding principle number two is there's only one true fat loss formula and it's different for everyone. And it doesn't that apply to carb cycling in a big way as well?
Absolutely. And the level of activity that you have on a daily basis. So, you know, when I hollered out the numbers of, well, I would recommend this many grams of carbs for a high carb day. That's just a baseline. That is not something you prescribe to everybody and anybody. That's a cookie cutter type of plan. So you have got to figure out, you know, if you've got a Fitbit or something, you can figure out how you burn, or even if you do a basal metabolic rate test, you can figure out how you burn the carbs and the proteins, and you can get really scientific with it if you want to. But, you know, we've got to find exactly what it is for each person as an individual for a high carb day. Same goes for a low carb day. And the same thing goes for a no carb day, because some people might need a little more than 30 grams of carbs just to be able to function, which is the recommended, you know, zero carb day.
Right. And so the rule of thumb is first you emulate, then you innovate. So in the case of emulate, you're going to take those numbers that Blythe gave you and maybe apply them and mm-hmm. then see how you respond. And then you innovate based on how your body responds. So this carb cycling approach really offers a lot of customization, a lot of ability to customize it. So it really fits well with this guiding principle number two, in that you have the ability to alter it to fit your own particular biochemistry and culture as well.
Yes.
In addition, you got to take your stage, your stage of change into account as well. For example, so you know, I like to break the stages of weight loss into four main stages. We call them the sweatpants stage, the skinny jeans stage, the swimsuit stage, and the bikini stage.
Okay.
And between each of those stages, we have three different forms of fat. So between the sweatpants and the skinny jeans phase, we call that the easy fat. That's the fat that responds to practically anything. And then between the skinny jeans and the swimsuit phase, we have what's called the stubborn fat. And that's when we start to get into some more difficult, you know, shifts and changes. That's when we have to work on really impacting the hormones. That's when, you know, just doing anything doesn't work anymore. You got to be really strategic.
Right. And I think a lot of people get stuck in that phase right there.
They do. And and so when we talk about, you know, this second core guiding principles that applies to this concept, when we're talking about there's one true fat loss formula and it's different for everyone, well, it's not just different for everyone. It's different for everyone at each of the stages. So if you're in the sweatpants stage, you have 100 pounds to lose, you don't have to be worrying about carb cycling right now.
Right.
All you've got to be worrying about is maybe cutting 10 to 15% of your calories down, you know, and getting a little
active.
Bit of walking. Yep.
And
implement some walking, and you may start to lose weight. Now, eventually, that program is no longer going to work for you. And so at that point, once maybe you move into the skinny jeans phase of your weight loss program, then you might say, okay, now I've got to start implementing tactics and strategies like carb counting or carb cycling and things like that.
Yeah, just even starting to pay attention to what it is that you're eating.
Right.
Yeah, getting a little more thorough with it. I like that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Third guiding principle is willpower is an exhaustible resource. Nobody's immune to willpower exhaustion. Now, the reason that's in there is because if we don't have, or if we cannot protect our willpower, we cannot expect sustained progress.
And so, true.
No carb, low carb, what impact do you think that has on your willpower?
Oh, it makes it extremely, it's very challenging. That poses a great challenge to your willpower.
It does.
Until you start to see results or even feel results. You know, sometimes you wake up and you're super energetic. This is one of the things I tell my clients quite often. For anybody who is in that skinny jeans phase we were just talking about, when it's time to implement some change, but they're not really sure where to start. So I maybe have them leave the starchy carbs out at dinner. Wow, for the next 5, 6, 7, 14 days, they wake up full of energy and they feel amazing. And they're just not in that, I call it like a carb hangover or like a fog in the morning from having, you know, maybe a tub of popcorn right before you went to bed. So just implementing something like that can motivate you, but doing it every day all the time might start to wear on your motivation a little bit.
Right. And that's where it comes in. You know, we know that blood sugar levels and getting blood sugar into the brain is a core factor in being able to maintain your willpower. Because willpower is not a character issue. Willpower is a chemical and a physiologic concept. We know that they can study the impact of various things on willpower. And, you know, as we implement or utilize willpower in one area of our life, it drains us from other areas. So when we're, you know, that's why, you know, we've said in the past that there's been research where dieters, people who have a tendency to diet a lot, are more likely to cheat on their spouse. And that may have a lot to do with the fact that the dieting aspect depletes them of their willpower. So when that when they are provided an opportunity to cheat, they don't have the ability to push that away as easily.
Right. And I do remember that.
That's an extreme example. But even when we're talking about when you're stressed out at work, you know, anybody who has a stressful job knows that they will have a tendency to eat towards the end of the day. Well, your willpower reserves are gone.
Right. Yeah, I remember talking about that study, and it's amazing, and it's so true. You know, and this is a whole nother topic, but you know, if you start by getting enough calories in earlier in the day, you set yourself up for having a little more willpower reserve later in the day in that particular area.
Right. And when you know that you're not going to be, like, if you're staring down, you know, an abyss of no carbs for the for the rest of your life. That's going to deplete your willpower. But if you know that tomorrow you're able to have a high carb day,
right,
that gives you a lot more fuel to continue through, right? It gives you
absolutely
the willpower, knowing that something is
coming
along, or that you can white knuckle it for today, but tomorrow you can let go of some of that stress.
Right. There's a little light at the end of the tunnel.
Right. So core guiding principle number 4 is eat and exercise to change your hormones, not to manage your calories. And what we mean by that is not that calories aren't important. We know that calories are important, but trying to control your calories by counting them is, well, it's a great way to kind of learn what too much, too little, or just enough is for your system.
Sure.
But it's not a great way to manage your lifestyle indefinitely. And there's a lot of reasons why that's true. It's a hassle. It causes you to become obsessed with your diet.
Yes.
It causes you can't do it indefinitely because eventually the body corrects for the low-calorie diet. So the approach is to try to change your hormones so that eventually the body will manage the calories itself. That's the approach. And I think carb cycling does a good job of helping you to achieve that goal. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And especially when you start paying enough attention to your food without becoming obsessed. But when you're learning about how many calories or how many carbohydrates on a high carb day versus a low carb day works for you, you know, there's a big learning curve there, figuring out, you know, what a bowl of popcorn is worth, you know, in carbohydrates, or what a half cup of rice versus a full cup of rice is worth. You know, 66 grams of carbs in a full cup of rice. I know this because I look at it a million times, but that's a huge learning curve that you take with you for the rest of your life. So if you know that you're going to a birthday party tomorrow and you're going to have a piece of cake, and maybe that's going to be your high carbohydrate day, and you want to keep the day before a low carbohydrate day, well, you're probably not going to have a cup of rice because you already know what the value of that is. So there's a whole learning curve that comes into just paying enough attention to what that is, that you don't have to pay attention forever. You learn.
It's a calibration. You're really calibrating your brain to what's an appropriate amount for you and your system. And, you know, I think a lot of the problem that people have is that their brains are not calibrated to what is too much.
Right. Absolutely. I totally agree with you 150%. Yes.
Cool. And so carb cycling, I think, really, because the goal of carb cycling is to impact the hormones in the most positive way without the side effects of a low carb, no carb diet, then I think it meets that principle very well.
Yes.
Principle number 5 is without self-awareness, nothing works. And what we mean by that is you cannot, you have to know that you're making progress. You have to know that you're making progress.
Right.
If you think you're not making progress, even if you are, like you and I have both met people and worked with people where when they hopped on the scale didn't move, but when we do measurements, the measurements dropped. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
In that
Which
case,
is why you do measurements. Right.
Right. Exactly. And that's why, you know, why when we say without self-awareness, nothing works, because anybody who hops on the scale and the scale doesn't move, but they lose inches, if you don't measure the inches, you're going to think that your program failed you. So you're going to quit it and you're going to move on to the next opportunity,
right. Yes.
If you will.
Self-awareness, it is, yes.
So this one really doesn't apply much to the whole concept of carb cycling beyond the fact that that you've got to know how your body handles carbs, and you've got to eat according to your – not just to your biochemistry, but also to the culture of your life, meaning that it's got to fit not just, you know, it just can't result in weight loss. It's got to result in other things of being convenient and able to maintain for the rest of your life, right?
Yes, absolutely. That's one of the big keys right there, is something that's sustainable, something that you can maintain forever.
Right. And then core guiding principle number six is there are calorie-free causes of fat storage.
Yes.
And I think this one
hormonal. Yes.
Yeah. And I think this one applies in this situation as well, in a sense. But the whole purpose of the guiding principle number six, which is there are calorie free causes of fat storage, was more speaking to things like stress and insomnia, or stress and lack of sleep.
Mm.
Those types of things are enough to cause fat storage, even though they are both calorie free. And
right.
And it would apply to our discussion today only because if you are eating a low-carb program, if you're eating a low-carb diet, we don't really discuss calories so much because of the fact that when you're on a low-carb, no-carb diet, your body will have a tendency to regulate the hormones that manage hunger. And so if you're on a carb cycling, you know, type program, then the ultimate goal is to get you to the point where you're not really, you know, worrying so much about calories. You're letting the body deal with that. And so in that sense, because we're not talking about calories when we're talking about carb cycling, we're talking more about how many, you know, how much or how many grams of carbs you're consuming. It does apply.
Yes. And, you know, that's a new level of comfort, I think, for a lot of people. People who have been tracking their food and counting their calories and, you know, adding up the points they have in their day, all of those things become exhausting. You know, like we talked about, being exhausted from putting forth all of that energy and seeing little or no results. But knowing that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, because you're training your body how to be able to trust your hunger signals, you're training your hormones, you're training your cravings, even. You're training your body and giving it what it needs, so it will have less of a tendency to want things that maybe you wanted in the past. How many times have you heard from somebody, a client of yours, that says, okay, so I've been really, really good, I've been really strict, even if it's carbohydrate counting and doing some type of carb cycling. And then they say, you know what, I've really been looking forward to that Cinnabon. Let's just say it's me. Mm. I've really been looking forward to that Cinnabon. And then they go eat it. And of course, that's a plethora of carbohydrates, sugars and whatnot. But then they're disappointed in the fact that it just didn't taste as good as they imagined it would. So that's a whole new level of realization that comes with carb cycling, especially over a longer period of time, is that you're training your body to not even crave those types of things anymore. That's a great thing to experience.
Right. And then, you know, going back to the to this whole concept of the various weight loss stages, you know, when you look at the four stages, the sweatpants stage, the skinny jeans stage, the swimsuit stage, the bikini stage, the bookends, the sweatpants stage and the bikini stage, mm-hmm. are stages where calorie focus is really higher.
Yes.
You know, because when you're in the sweatpants stage, cutting calories is usually enough to get some progress. Because at that point, you're generally, and it's not always, but you're generally speaking about somebody who's consuming way more calories than their body needs.
Yeah, which makes them feel sluggish and lethargic, and they have the fat rat syndrome, and then they move less.
Right, so that's a calorie-centric point at that point, just cutting some calories and getting some more exercise. Yeah. Then the bikini stage is another point. That's when we start to get into what we call the vanity fat, and that's when calorie counting becomes useful again, right?
Yes.
Because, because it's you're starting to work. You know, your hormones are well in balance, and now it's just about managing calories to the, you know, to the minuscule point, right?
Right.
And then in between that, you have the skinny jeans stage and the swimsuit stage, and that's what we call the hormone focus period of your weight loss journey. And that's where we focus primarily on the hormones to get them into balance, and we focus less on calories.
Yes. And that's comforting to know that's out there. Thank you for phrasing that way.
Right. Okay, and then principle number seven, the final principle, final guiding principle before we get into the how-to, is a successful program achieves three main goals. Number one, it changes body composition. Do you think carb cycling would help you achieve that, Blythe?
Yes.
Okay. It improves health. Do you think you
get healthier? Yes, absolutely.
And it improves energy.
Absolutely. And
Yeah.
I kind of reflecting back on what I said just a few minutes ago about even waking up just feeling more energized. I mean, we get kind of sucked into this dinner is the biggest meal of the day. And that's kind of how society operates, or we celebrate and it's at dinner time. Well, because it's after work and the whole family's together and having a big meal, and then waking up the next morning feeling lethargic because you've had this excess surge of calories. But once you start controlling that, sorry, that was a thunder. We're having a thunderstorm happening over here. Sorry about that. So anyway, changing that up just enough to where you have this great burst of energy. Absolutely. You might feel a little less energetic on the lower carb days, or the no carb days is what I really mean by that. But learning how to cycle that, you end up training your body on how to reserve some of the energy so you don't experience all of those things, the moodiness and the lethargy and all of those things.
Excellent. All right. Well, why don't you get into how to of carb cycling? Like, how would you implement it? How would you approach applying this to one of your clients, for example?
What I would probably do is have somebody write out their typical week, so Monday through Sunday. And most people have some sort of a workout plan together. If you don't, there are days that, well, you're at work and you're sitting at a desk, and then there are days where you're a little more active, like on the weekends, taking your kids to the pool or doing something that's not sitting at a desk. So I would have somebody write down basically what they do activity-wise throughout the week. And then I would have them go through and pair up the lower carbohydrate, zero carbohydrate days with the lowest level of activity day. So if Monday, you have a desk job and you're going to be working 10 hours, well, that should be probably a zero carb day. Tuesday, maybe you get to go out to lunch with a friend, so maybe you can walk there. If you know that you're going to be walking maybe on your lunch break or something like that, that should be a medium carb day. And then maybe Friday or Saturday, you and the family are going to go out, and maybe it's Friday night spaghetti night or something. If that's what you want to do, plan that in for the Friday, and then you'll alternate the days in between. Now, you might not be able to pair everything up perfectly, but what you can do is change up your level of activity to make it fit your carb cycling schedule. And that's a lot easier to do than changing up the food so much, if that makes sense. You don't want to have 3 or 4 0 calorie days in a row, is what I'm saying, if you know you're going to be sitting at a desk. So you'll make it a point maybe on Tuesday and Thursday to go for a walk on your lunch break. So you're going to have to bump up your activity level if you know that you're going to be having more carbohydrates to spend.
Yeah, and the risk here is that you can become obsessive about this, just like you can about carb counting. And I want people to try to avoid that. Try to stick to the fundamentals here, because when we're talking about the fundamentals, we're talking about, having low carb and high carb days. There may be
Right.
a lot of you out there who don't need to go no carb, and so you may just want to say, okay, I'm going to go low carb Monday, Wednesday, Friday,
There you
and
go.
then I'll go high carb on or Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, and then I'll try low carb on the other days and see
Sure.
what kind of result you get. Maybe that'll be enough for the change that you want. Maybe it
And
won't.
I think for most people, that would probably make enough difference to start seeing some results. And then as you get into it and you kind of get the feel for what you're doing and how it makes your body feel, then you can tweak it appropriately. Appropriately.
Yeah, I agree. And we gotta, in order to understand how this works, you've got to really distinguish between insulin and insulin resistance, and they are two separate things. Okay, you can have a high level of insulin, let's say after a big pasta meal, even in the absence of insulin resistance. And so when you have a high insulin level and you do not have insulin resistance, then that insulin can actually work in your favor. So if you lift weights, for example, if you do a full body, or a really aggressive weightlifting session, and then you have a high carb diet and you have high insulin levels, well, that insulin is going to drive the nutrients into the muscles. It's going to stimulate muscle growth. It's not necessarily
Right.
going to stimulate fat growth, fat development.
Right.
So, and that's because we don't have a baseline level of insulin resistance going on in your particular body. Now, you can have high insulin resistance and fairly low insulin levels if you are just, for example, starting. Like if you were to have a low carb meal and you've had high carb meals for the last, 6, 5 years, and then you have one meal that's a low carb meal, well, your insulin levels may not go high, but you'll still have a baseline level of insulin resistance there.
Right.
So with carb cycling, what we're trying to do is we're trying to regulate the insulin resistance by not exposing our body to high levels of carbs day in right. and day out. And by doing that, we'll drive down the insulin resistance. So even when we have a high insulin point after a high carb meal, mm-hmm. that isn't going to result in fat storage, or at least not sustained fat storage. It's okay if a little fat goes into the fat cells, as long as it comes out a little bit later.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a fantastic way to put it. And every step you take moving in that direction is going to be beneficial.
And so just don't go crazy with this, guys.
Don't become obsessive.
Right. Any successful weight loss program is, in one way or another, some sort of carb cycling program, because you have to implement and have some level of carb in order to maintain your brain, to keep your brain right. healthy, right. To keep your relationships healthy, because if you're no carb all the time, you know, for the most part, not everybody, but for the most part, you're going to be driving people away with
the level of irritability becomes much higher.
So that's carb cycling. I think it's certainly not an in-depth discussion, but you know, I love the fact that as you go through those seven guiding principles, like you could be sitting around or standing around in a party and somebody says, hey, you know, I found out about this brand new type of dieting, you know, called carb cycling, and it works great. What do you think about it? And you can kind of just go mentally through these six principles and say, hey, yeah, it checks off all seven. Yes. And so there's definitely something there.
Yeah. Great. It's awesome. It's awesome to have a little checklist like that.
So what else? I think that's a great discussion. Any final points about carb cycling?
You know, I really, if people need help with a starting point, I would love for them to reach out to us, you know, maybe ask a question. And quite often by giving me a little synopsis about yourself, I can give you at least a starting point. You know, I think people get really confused on where to start, or maybe even experience a little bit of anxiety thinking about, oh, geez, it's another plan. How am I going to do this? Where do I start? And I think once you get past that initial step, you know, which might be reaching out to me and just asking me, hey, this is me. Where would you recommend I start? If that's going to get you there, by all means, do it.
Yeah,
I'm happy to help people as much as possible.
Post on our Facebook page, Cut the Fat Podcast. Give us your experience as well. If you've been doing some sort of structured carb cycling program, like there are structured carb cycling programs out there where they say, okay, you're going to do this type of exercise on this day. You're going to eat these carbs. So if you've been doing some sort of structured program, or you've made your own structured program and it's been working for you, let us know. If it hasn't been working for us, let us know.
And, it's motivating to others.
Yeah, and it helps us kind of, you know, in science, you know, as a practitioner, oftentimes we get caught up in the research journals and saying, hey, you know, this is what the research shows. And then when you put it out in practice, it doesn't pan out. And so, you know, I think with carb cycling, because it is rooted not just in the science, but also in the fact that people who success, when you look at when you look back on people's lifestyles that have been successful for them, they almost always incorporate some level of carb, but it's almost always either a carb cycling program or a lower carb than what is average, you know, what is consumed by the average person.
Right.
So it definitely does play an important role in helping you to achieve your weight loss goals. The question is, how are you going to implement it into your life so it fits your biochemistry and the culture of your life as well?
Right. And something that you can carry with you and sustain forever.
Absolutely. All right. Well, you know, I guess that's good to leave it off for today. It's really good to be back here. And you know, we've got a bunch of good podcasts scheduled up and planned for the future. So I guess we'll see you in the next one, guys.
Awesome. Great talking to you, Ray. Have a fantastic afternoon.
All right. You too, bud.
All right.